Welcome to episode 4 of Stormcast, the one and only podcast for Marvel's Johnny Storm, aka the Human Torch. Shall we jump right into Stormwatch?
I think we should.
God, the month of April was so exciting, y'all. I know that Stormwatch is always so exciting, but like, this month it was really exciting. I hope you can tell I'm being sarcastic.
Nothing happened. You did one important thing.
Okay, listeners. So this is the order in which the issues came out. Uncanny Avengers 22, Mosaic 7, and then Rocket Raccoon 5. But the actual chronological order was what?
I believe it's Rocket Raccoon, then Mosaic, then Uncanny Avengers, but it might also be Mosaic, then Rocket Raccoon, then Uncanny Avengers. Uncanny Avengers is happening at the same time as most of the rest of the books Marvel is currently publishing, so we're post Inhumans versus X-Men. Mosaic and Rocket Raccoon are both pre or during Inhumans versus X-Men.
And it's not clear why, because it's not like Rocket Raccoon was delayed. It's been coming out every month. I mean, I guess this is a positive thing in some ways, where they're choosing not to let the event scheduling interfere with the pacing of the individual stories.
Yeah, that's true.
But it's also like, when are we?
But as a canon nitpicky person, it's very frustrating to me personally.
Yeah, I guess the things that we like as people who are very invested in the overall tapestry of the Marvel Universe are not necessarily the things that are good for marketing to a broader audience.
I'm comic book guy.
How did it happen this way that we're both that person?
I don't know. We should find a not that person to, like, offer their viewpoints.
We have a really diverse set of opinions here at Stormcast.
It's all femdom and continuity.
So, Trinket, do you want to tell us what happened in Uncanny Avengers 22?
The answer is no, but I'm going to do it anyway. In the continuing The Red Skull Ate Xavier's Brain drama, as we've previously established on Stormcast, the Red Skull is now in possession of Professor Xavier's psychic powers, took the Uncanny Avengers hostage, mind-controlled them, etc., etc. Anyway, they broke free of the mind control, thanks to Rogue, and took the Red Skull into custody. So the Red Skull now in custody of the Uncanny Avengers, and they're going to take the psychic part of Xavier's brain out of his head. Now, as we've previously established, there is a giant picture of the Red Skull eating Xavier's brain in Uncanny Avengers 19, and I know this is a Johnny Storm podcast, and I shouldn't be getting hung up on this, but I just want to know what went down here? Is there a...
It was on a previously page,
yes,
though, right?
Yes, it was, like, on a previously page.
So it never appeared in the actual comic, but it was also in the comic.
Yeah.
So we don't know.
The best I can give you people at this point, our listeners, who I know really want to find out whether or not the Red Skull ate Xavier's brain.
Red Skull cast.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Please don't.
I didn't say that. No. I didn't say that.
Yeah, the best I can figure out is that I think he had the psychic part of the brain surgically implanted in his own brain, and then he ate the rest of it, because that's what you do if you're a supervillain with a skull for a face.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. Johnny Storm once again comments that this is such a major step down from being on the Fantastic Four, which is true. This is a D-list team.
Beast puts that part of the brain into a box and gives it to Rogue.
Captain America attempts to take the bit of Xavier's brain from Rogue, who refuses and leaves with it.
Because she just wants it to be over.
Yeah, she, like, wants to respect Professor Xavier's memory, and the brain getting passed around like this is not doing that. So Johnny flies after her, and Rogue says that she needs to end this, and Johnny says, "You sure?" And Rogue says, "Yes, send Charles home." And Johnny says, "Flame on," and incinerates the brain, and he looks so good here.
He's very beautiful, but also important is that his thighs are very beautiful.
His thighs look great. I don't know where that butt came from, because... That's new.
Okay, so he's flying. There's no reason he needs to have his back arched with his legs.
Why is he arching his back that
I can't
much.
Even describe this without it sounding filthy.
It is filthy.
But he looks great.
This is just a podcast dedicated to telling you about Johnny Storm's thigh. Anyway, so Professor Xavier's brain has been destroyed. The Red Skull is no longer psychic, and he is in S.H.I.E.L.D. custody. And, you know, the team has kind of been disbanded at this point by Steve Rogers, so they kind of go and have a farewell party. I think that's what's happening here. I'm going to confess that I mostly read Johnny's speech bubbles and kind of skim everything else. Read everything, unless you don't care about most of the rest of these characters. Johnny is drinking with his pinky extended, which is adorable.
They do a toast.
Yes. Johnny toast to the departed.
Which could mean so many things.
Yeah. And then they're talking afterwards, and Johnny says, notably, I just want to point out, you guys remember when I called that Spidey would return? I was totally right. This has nothing to do with anything anyone else is talking about. He just wants to talk about his boyfriend, Spider-Man.
How do we know that this is after IVX?
God damn it. I guess we don't, and we just have to assume. Because they're going to be moving into another plot that seems to be taking place right after this, and I think... I don't know. I hate this.
Because this is before Secret Empire.
Yeah, but a lot of things seem to currently be before Secret Empire.
That's true.
Like, they're letting a lot of things wrap up storylines before they go into that.
Which I guess is a good thing.
It is cutting down on the amount of science.
Mosaic 7. To recap, Mosaic is an inhuman who has the ability to jump between bodies. And when he is possessing a body, there's not really a way to tell. They just act weird because it's Mosaic in there. And when he's outside of a body, nobody could see him. Until Johnny came along, and he could see Mosaic, and he taught Mosaic how to turn himself visible and invisible.
And they both silently reminisced about when they fucked in Rio.
Mosaic 7 is surprising because we didn't think they were gonna explain how Johnny could see Mosaic, but they actually kind of did.
We didn't have faith, and for once someone proved us wrong.
So what was actually cut from the last episode was a lot more speculation, but then, like, this issue actually came out before the last episode came out, so... In this issue, Mosaic is hanging out with the Inhumans, and Beast is there, because he's working with ISO on stuff. And so he's also looking into Mosaic and, like, what makes him tick. And Johnny is very supportive. Johnny's, like, visiting him in the lab and says, "Hang in there, buddy, you're doing great."
Yeah, Johnny's cheerleading this science experiment.
Basically, Beast's theory is that since Johnny and Mosaic are both beings of plasma, at least when Johnny's flamed on, he's a being of plasma, maybe plasmic beings can all see each other. It's like very vaguely explained like that.
This is a setup for some weird explicit rated fanfic if I've ever heard one.
Speaking of which, there's a part where Beast tells Mosaic that even when he's visible, he's still not tangible. And Mosaic is looking over at ISO, and he says, "That's going to be a problem for me, Doc. See, I really like touching things." And in the background, you can see Johnny, like, looking at them. I mean, it's not anything, because you can't see his expression, but I can imagine. He also, like, comes up and gets, like, right in between
them. He, like, drapes himself all over Hank McCoy during this explanation.
Johnny is lonely.
He is very lonely. He just wants some physical attention.
And this is before the end of IVX, so he's still with Medusa.
Not being sexually fulfilled.
He appears a little bit later, because this is at the same time as whatever issue of IVX it was that Sabretooth attacks them. So it's just the same scene of Johnny coming and attacking Sabretooth, except Sabretooth doesn't say Blondie in this version.
So what good is it to me?
Honestly. And that's the entire thing.
Okay, Rocket Raccoon number 5. I'm gonna skip everything that happens because I did not read 2 through 4. And I'm gonna be honest, I really barely read 5. I just skimmed till I saw Johnny. Kraven the Hunter is here for some reason. Kraven the Hunter enthusiasts, take note.
So we sort of mentioned in our first episode Johnny's previous appearance in Rocket Raccoon, but it was in December, so it was a bit before we started. In Rocket Raccoon number one, Johnny met Rocket on the streets and invited him back to his depression cave on New Adelon and made him a drink and was like, teams are just the worst because in the end you end up alone and all I have are these fancy Fantastic Four computers that I use to play World of Warcraft. And then he like fell asleep in his underwear on the couch after inviting Rocket Raccoon to like stay and hang out with
And then
him.
Rocket robs him.
Yes, he like hacks into his fancy World of Warcraft computer and takes off while Johnny is drunk sleeping. That was great.
It was great. It's so sad. He's just so sad. Even the raccoon leaves him.
Rocket Raccoon 5 does not live up to those standards.
Yeah, God, I don't know what's going on here, but basically, Rocket asks where the Avengers are. Did they go on vacation? And there's a voice that says, "Will we do?" And then it's Johnny, and he's got Medusa and Karnak and Lockjaw with him. And he's kind of like, "Yeah, the Inhumans are all you're getting, buddy." When Rocket's like, "No, that's not good enough." And then he crouches down. He talks to Rocket, and he says that like he was a hero out there.
Again, playing the cheerleader role.
Although what I like is that their paparazzi shows up and everyone's like, "The Human Torch saved everyone! Johnny, you're amazing!" Which like is great because I don't know when the last time he's had this is.
Also of note, his thighs are very powerful in this issue.
Yeah, he's been working out.
It ends with him posing with his fans while people take pictures, and as Rocket Raccoon walks off, he yells, "Hey, did you steal my wallet the other night?" He just wants to be friends with the raccoon, and it's not happening.
No, why does he want to be friends with the raccoon so bad?
He has no other friends! Jennifer is too depressed to call him, and he's too depressed to call
I
Jennifer.
know. When is Hulk gonna address this? Possibly never.
There are so many things that I want from Hulk that I'm not getting, but also what I am getting is so good, so I can't really complain.
Hulk is really, really good. I want other things to be happening on it, but also it's really good, so I can't actually complain.
Listeners, the current series Hulk is about Jennifer Walters' She-Hulk, and it's about her dealing with trauma in the aftermath of Civil War II, in which her cousin, Bruce Banner, the main Hulk, was killed. And it's really, really good.
It's really good.
But there's no Johnny in it.
Tragically, her gay sidekick isn't Johnny.
Yeah, it also doesn't explore some of the other She-Hulk relationships that I really like as much as I would like, but that's okay. It does have Patsy Walker, which is good.
Yes, it does. Although I feel like Patsy Walker has eclipsed a lot of Jen's other relationships recently. And like, while I like Jen and Patsy together a lot, I would like to see more variety.
Yeah, like, I would like series in general to not just acknowledge a character's recent continuity, but also go back a bit. Because, like, we've already gotten the recent stuff recently,
Yeah,
so.
we had that, and it was great.
Dig a bit.
Sometimes you get a cake, and it's a really good cake, but like afterwards, maybe you don't want another cake right away.
Yeah, or you just want like a different flavor of cake.
Yeah.
It's been a while since you had a lemon custard tart.
Yes.
Is that a thing?
Yes.
I don't know anything about desserts because I don't eat.
Because you don't eat.
I don't eat sweets, so I'm just like saying words
No,
that I know
that's a real
exist.
thing. A lemon tart is a real thing.
Okay.
Should we talk about Infamous Iron Man, a comic that Johnny is not in, but that I am so much more emotionally invested in than the rest of these?
I feel like we should talk about it because it was
It
really
was
good.
really good, and we talked about it last time, and there's just stuff that has been built over that now. Can I say, every time I see like one of those Tumblr posts that's like showrunners going shocking twists and drama and explosions, blah blah blah, and fans going, "I will pay you $50 to just have the characters talk to each other." Infamous Iron Man is a book where characters talk to each other, and it's really good.
Oh, it really is. Like, I guess occasionally there's some action, but it's really about the feelings. The actions are there to support it. And I think also, it fits the art style really well because Alex Maleev is not really an action artist. Whenever he draws action, it's sort of, it doesn't feel like it's moving, which usually is bad, but it feels like snapshots. And then, so when he does talking heads, it's
It's really
somehow
good.
really good. I don't know. Like, He also doesn't draw people that expressive, and
Yet
yet.
I sit around having feelings all the time.
I really like Alex and Lee. I really like Ryan Michael Bendis,
Yeah.
too. They're like my team.
Okay, Stormcast is gonna reveal themselves as filthy Brian Michael Bendis fans.
Honestly, yes. Ryan Michael Bendis writes more talking than possibly any other
Yeah.
writer in any medium, at least in
There's
comics.
so many speech bubbles, and I'm here for it.
It's his trademark to the point where that's like, if you're gonna get annoyed about something about him, then it would be too much talking.
I guess not everyone loves talking as much as I love talking.
I mean, there are some times when the way that he does it annoys me a bit, just because it's like so Brian Michael Bendis. Like whenever there's a crowd scene and there's just people yelling stuff out, I'm like, I don't need this.
As much as I'm in favor of writing Spider-Man using 12 words when you could have used two, occasionally with his Peter dialogue, it's just like running on through the entire page, and I'm just like, slow down there. Overall.
Overall, though, his dialogue is so good. He's so good at emotions and like
He also
relationships.
tends to write dialogue like how people actually talk, which is great.
Yeah. We are
We're
such dirty
dirty
Brian Michael
Brian
Bendis
Bendis
fans.
lovers. I also think that Infamous Iron Man, it's pretty restrained for Bendis dialogue, which I think is partly because Doom as a character is very eloquent and well-spoken and chooses his words carefully.
God, just the way that he writes different voices is so
He's
versatile.
really good with dialogue.
When you read Something Teen that he's done, you're like, okay, so he could write in a teen voice, and it doesn't immediately follow that he's gonna be able to write Victor Von Doom really well, but he
He
does!
writes Victor Von Doom really well, and his Ben is really good in this.
So I guess we should actually talk about the issue.
We should actually talk about the issue. Basically, in Infamous Iron Man, as we've established, Doom is a hero now. He's Iron Man. It's great. I love it. He's so dramatic. And, he's done it all. He's literally been a god, and now he's gonna be a superhero. He's gonna make amends for everything he did. I love it. I love him. He's great. But he has been running around putting supervillains away. Basically, he's been playing like he's a giant cat and just like depositing supervillains at S.H.I.E.L.D. Like, I killed this for you. Love me. He hasn't actually killed anyone, but it's like that general air of here's something for you. I brought you a present. Side note, which is very important for Fantastic Four fans, the wizard has a man bun now.
There was a big gathering of a bunch of supervillains, and they were like, we have to take out Dr. Doom because he's gonna kick all our asses. And then he comes and he kicks everybody's asses.
It's great. I love him. And then we come into the S.H.I.E.L.D. helicarrier, where Ben is with Sharon Carter.
Is it the Wrecker?
It is the Wrecker.
S.H.I.E.L.D. has the Wrecker, and Ben goes in to question him about what happened because he's like the sole survivor.
Yeah, Ben goes pretty tough guy on him. Ben is like 500% done. Ben never wants to hear the word name Victor Von Doom ever again.
And the Wrecker's like, Victor Von Doom, he killed everybody!
Doom says to him, "My issue with you is that you serve no purpose, you serve no one but yourself. Change your ways. If not, I will come back and destroy you."
Repent, he said. And he said to tell anyone that would listen that he was out there, that he was going to fix it.
And Ben is just like, fix what?
The world.
The world. Of course, the world. Sure. Ben is so done.
I love Ben.
And then Ben goes, "So it seems really, it's not so much that you escaped Doom's dangerous clutches as he spanked your little bottom and sent you on your way." And the Wrecker
I like
goes,
how this has just turned into us reading the comic because it's so
"It's
good.
so good, though." And then the Wrecker goes dramatically with his eyes cast to the ground, "I survived." And Ben goes, "They all survived."
He kicked all their asses, but they're all just in S.H.I.E.L.D.'s basement right now.
Victor Von Doom made the biggest costume criminal takedown in the history of costume criminal takedowns.
But Ben doesn't
Yeah,
believe
Ben
it.
doesn't believe it. Ben's like, it's not that simple. There's no way that Doom has gone straight.
There must be some long game. Oh, yeah, I love that. Has Doom gone straight? No!
Yeah, this is like a good reaction
No
panel.
way that Dr. Doom is a straight man now.
Listen, Ben witnessed a lot of Doom and Reed interaction over the years. He was there in college. He knows what went down.
Like we saw in the last issue when Ben kept on trying to flirt with Reed and Reed kept on staring into Victor's eyes.
So then we see Ben on a Manhattan street. He's got groceries. I love him. He's staying at a hotel, I guess. He goes back to his hotel, which looks very nice. Goes back to his room, and then there's, like, the Iron Man armor just standing there, staring at him. And behind the Iron Man armor is Victor Von Doom enjoying room service.
God, this comic is so good.
So good! This is my favorite thing that came out this month, though.
But yeah, they have this serious talk, where Ben's like, I don't trust you and what you're doing.
And then Victor just cuts in and goes, Benjamin, I'm sorry for all of it, for the very first snide thing I ever said to you in college up until not expressing to you how much I miss them too.
Them who?
Reed and Sue. And so Ben tells him not to say their names. And Victor continues, he was a genius and she was as close to a perfect soul as I have ever met. And I am ashamed that I was so unable to appreciate that while they were here, and I am monumentally ashamed that, instead, I chose to hurt them and lash out at them in blind rage and jealousy.
Okay, while we are reading out all of the dialogue right now, you should also read this comic.
Just read this. I know we've read all of this comic to you, but you need to see Maliv's art.
It's good, and, like, the pacing is good, and this comic is good, and we need to refrain from reading out every line, but it's just so good.
But it's so good! Okay, I'll summarize. So basically, Ben says that, you know, Victor can say whatever he wants. Ben's never gonna believe him, not after everything that Ben has seen him do. And, you know, Victor's just like, you know, that's fair. And they kind of part ways. Victor leaves, including, like, the best panel in history, which is, as he's leaving, he goes, did you see what that imbecile Peter Parker did to the Baxter building? And Ben goes, yeah. And Victor goes, I will see to it. And Ben goes, don't.
I love that. I love that on so many levels.
It's so good. It's so good on so many levels.
Like, just him, like, feeling insulted by what Peter has done to the Baxter building.
Peter's ugly-ass redesign.
The PI logo.
Ugh! Glowing red. It's bad. It's bad. Peter does not have taste. Yeah.
Victor, he loves the Fantastic Four in his own way. He loves Reed and Sue.
He is, for better or worse, really part of the family and has been for a few years, and they have a very complicated relationship, but it's a relationship. And Peter Parker is just some idiot.
Yeah, he doesn't deserve it.
First of all, Doom doesn't know Peter Parker is Spider-Man, so, like, that, you know, it removes that link to the family, even. He's just some dude that, like, Johnny occasionally gets moony-eyed over.
But then, Ben... Sorry, I'm not gonna read this line.
What is he doing?
Okay, you're gonna read this line.
Is he going in the elevator? Dr. Doom in an elevator?
And then Ben turns around to go back into his hotel.
So good.
And when he goes back in, sitting at the table is Ultimate Reed Richards.
Yeah, and he just says, hello, Ben.
So we've talked about how this is super amazing.
This is so amazing! Bendis is giving me exactly what I wanted! Oh my god, it's so good! You guys, Ultimate Reed, who is here, and also in every universe, which I'm having far less problems with all of a sudden, he loved his version of Ben.
He loved him.
And even when he goes evil, like, he wants Ben to go with him.
Mm-hmm. He wants to kill everybody else, like, kill Sue,
yeah.
kill Johnny, kill Peter, or, like, who cares about everyone else?
But Ben.
Ben was his heart.
Ben was his heart. Ben, oh. And Ben is like, was like his protector in childhood and his, like, mm-hmm. only friend and confidant. And it's so good. He loved his Ben.
And he never really got over how, like, he thought he destroyed Ben's life.
Yes. It was very much the driving force behind all of his actions. Like, it's there a little bit in 616 Reed, but it's not the sole focus of why 616 Reed does what he does, whereas with Ultimate Reed, a very strong driving force throughout the whole thing has been fixing Ben.
Even his descent to the dark side, when you see him sort of crossing lines that he shouldn't, like going behind S.H.I.E.L.D.'s back and ignoring very fair warnings. It's because he's trying to find a way to fix Ben. So this is something.
Oh, there's just this, there's a lot of emotion. Yeah, like you were saying, Alex Maleev doesn't tend to draw particularly expressive faces, but there is something about this page that just, it's speaking to me so much.
I think he gets the mood really well.
He does, yeah.
Even if they aren't making, like, big exaggerated expressions, the way that they hold themselves, the way that they're lit, it just conveys so much.
I love the juxtaposition of going from Doom in the seat to Reed in the seat, because it's like the occasional Reed and Doom are two sides of coin thing. So to have Doom leave and then Ben turn around and Reed is exactly there, it's a lot. It's good. It's good stuff. It's good framing.
So I've got questions about this place where Ben is staying. Like, if it's a hotel.
Yeah!
One, there are stacks of books everywhere. Two, there's like a violin.
I'm just gonna say, while we were talking earlier, I scrolled back up to try and see if there was an earlier shot of the room from this angle. Because it doesn't look like some place Ben would stay. Like, it doesn't look like a very particularly Ben Grimm kind of room. The violin, the books, even the kind of old-fashioned, like, oil lamps?
I don't know. One of them looks like just a candle.
Yeah. It's a very odd setup. And I'm wondering if Reed didn't somehow bring a room with him.
I think he might have, because you can sort of see the room when Victor's in there, and it doesn't look totally different, but it also doesn't... You don't see any of this weird shit in there. Like, there are no candles that you can see. There's no violin, and it's the same wall. It's a different angle, so it's hard to tell exactly, but it doesn't look the same.
Yeah, it doesn't. I'm also going to address the lettering thing, which might just be an error, but it also could potentially be something.
That's true.
So when Reed says, "Hello, Ben," he says it in all caps, which is how dialogue in the majority of 616 books currently being published is written. Not all of them, but the majority are typeset, so everything is capital letters. In the Ultimate universe, this was not the case. Ultimate had proper public capitalization. Mm-hmm. And even in 616, Ultimate Reed has been speaking, all of his speech bubbles have been formatted like an Ultimate universe speech bubble. So this is the first time he's been shown speaking with a 616 style speech bubble.
The universes are not internally consistent with how they capitalize, but whenever there's one that is about cross-universe stuff, like Spider-Man or Ultimate End, where you have characters from both universes, they're always distinguished by capitals versus lowercase. And in the previous appearance of Ultimate Reed in Infamous Iron Man, he was speaking in lowercase and everyone else was speaking in capital. Now, personally, I do think that this is just an error. I don't think it's anything, because it's such an easy error to make.
Yeah, this is true.
But yeah, it could be something.
Anyway, this issue is incredible, and I cannot wait for the next one.
Yeah, the cover of the next issue, at least the one that they put in the preview at the end of this issue, is Ultimate Reed facing off against Dr. Doom, and it's, like, set against a panel of classic Reed punching classic Doom in the face. This had nothing to do with Johnny Storm.
It had nothing to do with Johnny Storm, but also...
This is a Fantastic Four book.
It could potentially have something to do with Johnny Storm.
It will eventually impact Johnny Storm.
If only in my fanfic.
And that is really what this podcast is for, isn't it? To keep the people informed about what's going on in Johnny's world so that the people can write Johnny fic.
Please write Johnny fic. Yeah, so that was Stormwatch. As we said, nothing happened.
Nothing happened to Johnny. Plenty happened to Ben.
Plenty happened to Ben and to Doom and to Xavier's brain.
Okay, so one of our listeners sent an ask to Traincat asking us to elaborate on something that we mentioned sort of in passing in a previous episode, which is that Ultimate Johnny Storm is definitely gay. We can definitely elaborate.
I believe this in my heart. Ultimate Johnny is just only into boys.
To be clear, he's not definitely gay in that we think that he was intentionally written to be gay. He's definitely gay, like, in the way that Iceman was definitely gay before they wrote him actually being gay, where you can just tell. They may not have known, but we know.
But all it takes is one person to read a comic and go, damn, that boy's not straight.
Why we think that Ultimate Johnny in particular is gay when 616 Johnny is bi is largely because Ultimate Johnny's relationships with women and, like, with female love interests are always very weird, where they're simultaneously really dramatic and completely devoid of actual emotional attachment. I say love interest, but all of these last, like, maximum 2 issues.
Yeah, like, who is an Ultimate Johnny love interest? Theoretically, Crystal. But the last time we see Ultimate Crystal, she's like, well, if he's gonna die, he's gonna die, so...
Yeah, and I think she's just in that and the annual. So it's still, like, a 2-issue thing. I think Jessica, it's addressed, like, in 3 issues, and that is the record.
Let's be really clear here. I don't think that the fact that she was a brunette, spider-powered person had no impact there for him.
Who has Peter's exact face.
Yes.
How did he...
I don't think he was paying extremely close attention.
I guess when you see, like, a girl version of a guy, you know, you don't think.
Well, he did ask if they were cousins or something. That's true. So he noted a resemblance. He went the normal place and not the Marvel place, which is, oh shit, it's a clone.
Ultimate Jessica Drew is Peter Parker's female clone.
Yeah.
Who has all of his memories up until sometime age 15, whenever she was created, because that is how cloning works in the Ultimate Universe. No, in the Marvel multiverse, that's how cloning works. Science. Yeah, Johnny's other relationships, they're, like, 2-issue things. He has a thing with Liz Allen where she has a crush on him and he seems to, like, kind of reciprocate, but, like, it's not very deep. It's 2 issues again.
Yeah, it's also, they're always on group dates where he's surrounded by other boys.
Oh, man, yes.
He really, really likes double and group dating. Basically, that's all he wants to do. He doesn't want to go on solo dates. The only times we see him on solo dates, he's not having a good time. There's at least once where he uses Peter to get out of it, and another where he just, it's clearly a publicity date. It's like him and some famous girl, and it's like set up so people will come take photos of them, and he is so mad about it.
Yeah, so all of his romantic interactions with girls give me the impression that he's not interested in girls. It's very much like compulsory heterosexuality.
Yeah, and also I think that the way Ultimate Johnny was raised versus how 616 Johnny was raised plays a big part in this, because 616 Johnny was either raised by his older sister, his aunt, or some combination therein, like from early childhood onwards, versus Ultimate Johnny, who was raised by his father at the Baxter Think Tank, which was funded by the military. So he's been surrounded by military people his entire life.
So there's a lot of reason for him to just emulate the way that he thinks that relationships between men and women are supposed to be.
And it's like in a really like hypersexual way. He goes from zero to having sex with somebody like that.
Or zero to this is the love of my life and I'm going to marry her when there's no reason for him to like her.
Yeah, like, she's there, and she's conventionally attractive.
Whereas if you contrast that with 616 Johnny's relationships with women, they're similarly very dramatic, but he's also, like, very invested. Even when they're, like, silly teen romances.
He's, like, extremely emotionally invested in them, and when he's like, you know, oh my god, we're gonna get married and have 18 children, and I've picked out all the names already, you can tell that he, like, is genuinely feeling something.
Like, they've been on a million dates. It's not just, like, going through the motions of what a relationship's supposed to be.
He had one brief relationship in the early 200s where actually the girl dumped him because he was too emotionally serious for her. Like, she was like, let's just be friends. And it was clearly, like, a physical relationship on her part, and he was just, like, getting way too emotionally attached for her. So that's an interesting. God, he's so weird when it comes to love. because he should be dating a guy. Mm-hmm. That's why.
Yeah, and this is something that you pointed out on Tumblr. Ultimate Johnny pays a lot of attention to guys. He and Ben meet for about a second before Ben turns Rocky, but he says to him, "Your eyes are the same as they were before."
Yeah, so he must have, like, Ultimate Ben is a big guy, and Johnny is not particularly so, so he must have really been craning his head back to,
to like, stare into this dude's eyes and, like, memorize what they look like.
Beautiful blue eyes. Reed's hunky friend. Yeah. And he also, afterwards, and this is partly because Reed and Sue are a couple pretty much immediately on an Ultimate, but he spends, like, a lot of time around Ben, and you do kind of get the impression that it's Johnny who's initiating all this time they spend together, because Ben just wants to go be incredibly depressed about being a rock person.
But Johnny's attracted to that rock.
Yeah, Johnny would climb Mount Everest. There's literally to the point where later on, Ben is kind of hitting on Liz Allen, who also has fire powers, similar to Johnny in Ultimate. And he's hitting on Liz Allen, like, a lot. And Johnny's just like, is this some kind of power transference thing? Like, are you really in love with me?
So what's interesting is over the course of the Ultimate Universe, Johnny does kind of change where he talks about wanting to get serious with his life overall, but also, like, he goes on some double date with Bobby, and he says something about, would you want to go out with a girl who likes you just because you're Iceman? And Bobby's like, of course! And Johnny's like, oh, that's not for me. But, like, he doesn't actually get more serious with, he doesn't have any love interests. So
no.
The most important people in his life are Bobby, Peter, and, like, the girls who he clearly has no romantic interest in, like, Gwen and Aunt May.
Yeah, even when Lana Baumgartner shows up, Bobby is very into her. And even Peter a little bit. Peter has different girl drama, but there's definitely, like, this vibe that, oh yeah, that's a hot girl. Johnny is not particularly interested in her. He comments that, like, Peter gets every girl, but it's very much about Peter. It's not a, you know, oh damn, another one stolen.
It's not unlike the scene in the Get Down episode 2 where they're all talking about girls and Shaolin doesn't say anything.
Shaolin Fantastic is gay, and so is Ultimate Johnny Storm.
You heard it here.
On this a Get Down podcast. But hey, it ties in because the Get Down has the Fantastic Four plus one.
That's true.
But yeah, Ultimate Johnny Storm is, after Peter's death, Bobby definitely becomes, like, his emotional focal point. Bobby is the person he wants to stay with, even if he has to go live in awful Morlock tunnels, instead of presumably his sister's nice apartment.
I hate the Ultimate Universe.
He just wanted to have 5 mutant kids with Bobby.
He's a good boy.
He is a good boy. He just wanted to protect children.
He wanted to protect children, and he wanted to be loved, and he's just having a really hard time.
I just want him to have a nice boyfriend who appreciates him and is nice to him.
Named Robert Drake.
Yes, named Robert Drake.
Have we successfully described how Ultimate Johnny is gay? Have we convinced the people?
I don't know, because I'm so thoroughly convinced myself.
I feel like it's so easy to take what we say as just, of course they would read him this way. So you all need to read the comics.
I know we've said multiple times that Ultimate Fantastic Four is not very good.
It's not good. I wanted to mention how, like, probably the actual reason why Johnny's relationships with girls in Ultimate are so shit is just because just the comics were shit. However, that doesn't change the way that it ends up reading.
Yeah, I do think it evolved into something else, especially late in Ultimate Spider-Man, because the would you want to kiss a girl who just wanted to kiss you because you were Iceman line just really sticks out to me always.
Because it's very different from Johnny at the beginning of Ultimate Fantastic Four. He's like, yeah, I'm Justin Timberlake.
I'm the Human Torch. Take a billion pictures of me. Here's my custom designer sunglasses.
Yeah.
J Storm.
Yo, yo, yo.
Yo, yo.
Yo. He's so embarrassing and I love him so much. But yeah, I do think if you read Ultimate Fantastic Four with an eye on how Johnny behaves towards women versus how Johnny behaves towards men, it's pretty obvious. It's not that many comics. It's 60 issues, two annuals, Fantastic Four Requiem. This sounds a lot when I say it out loud, but I'm sorry, to me this is genuinely not a lot of comics. If I can keep it under 200, I'm like, yeah, that's a quick read.
Okay, the other thing is that, I feel like we've talked about this before, but if there are, like, certain Ultimate Fantastic Four relationships that you're really into, then Ultimate Fantastic Four is probably not the series to read. Probably the series to read, in my opinion anyway, is Ultimate Comics Doomsday.
Yeah.
For Ben and Reed, then...
Ultimate Power.
Yeah, Ultimate Power. And then Ultimate Comics Doomsday. And then there's, like, some stuff in Ultimate Fantastic Four, but it's not that much.
No. There's so much Reed Sue in Ultimate Fantastic Four that ends up not being important.
Yeah. It's like, this is a really weird analogy, but it's like when you have an anime that's based on a manga, but then it catches up and they have to do a bunch of filler episodes that don't impact the plot in any way. That is what Ultimate Fantastic Four feels like.
Yeah, if you are invested in Johnny Dudes, the later issues of Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. You start with Ultimate Comics Spider-Man number one, where he shows up on Peter's doorstep, exhausted and bruised, and swoons into his arms, which is impressive because he has 5 inches on Peter in this universe. Not in any other universe! I want to make that clear!
Oh, yeah, yeah. Y'all need to know.
There's no height difference between them in 616. None!
They're both 5'10".
Yeah.
Whereas in the Ultimate Universe, Peter is approximately 5'6", possibly 5'5".
He is tiny. And Ultimate Johnny is just like a string bean.
All the girls are taller than Peter. That's what you need to know. MJ, Gwen, and Kitty are all taller than Peter. He's so small and I love him so much.
He's a good, tragic boy. God, I hate Ultimate Marvel.
It's bad. It's so good! It's bad.
You say that, you're not the one who has to reread Ultimate Comics X-Men to recheck some things.
No, I do. Okay, so, listeners, we're writing the same Ultimate Bobby Johnny fic.
We are writing the same Ultimate Bobby Johnny fic.
It just happened. And, yes, I absolutely do need to read Ultimate Comics X-Men again. Also, regular Ultimate X-Men again, and I've been meaning to for, like, years, but I just don't like them. My document, it's always, like, a bunch of question marks because I can't remember who was dating who or what anyone's powers were or who was on the team, so I'm just like, Blackheath!
God, yeah, so we're writing the same fanfic, and it's just anyone's bet who will be finished first because...
No, it's gonna be Trinket. Because mine has been going since, like, 2012.
Okay, so it'll probably be me, but I have 10,000 words of this written. And it's so far from being done. It's so far from being done. This is going to be, like, a conservative estimate is 30,000 words, but it could be longer. After Spidey Torch Week, this and my big, fantastic, amazing Spider-Man movie fic become my main points of focus. So it's going to be a race between those two.
Plug Spidey Torch Week.
Yeah, so you should look at the AO3 collection, Spidey Torch Week 2017, and judge me on how much I did or did not write.
They're good! One of them is about Johnny cooking. The entire thing is about Johnny cooking.
And being sad. So yeah, check out the collection.
We'll put a link in the description.
Historical figures Johnny Storm has slept with.
That's a great segue. Just read out the name of the section.
I'm not even looking at it. I'm looking at my Ultimate Bobby Johnny fic, wherein I don't think he slept with very many historical figures. He's about to have monogamous, vaguely unfulfilling, but very emotional sex with Bobby Drake for the rest of his life.
Temperature play.
temperature play would be interesting because Donnie doesn't feel cold and Bobby would melt.
No, I wrote a thing with that, but then I had to delete it because every time I read it over, I started screaming. Because I decided that, like, Johnny usually stuff heats up before it touches him, so that's why he doesn't feel cold. But, like, since Bobby generates his own cold...
Oh, hey. I'm a little into that.
But, yeah, then it was, like, too much and too intimate, so I had to delete it. This happens a lot, where I just, like, can't take it. I have to get rid of it.
See, I just, like, I'm like, I'm never posting this. Like, it gets really emotionally intimate sometimes, and you're just like, people can never know I wrote this. The fucking six arms fic is like, I keep having to drag it back from being this, because I just, the point is that he has six arms and six hands, not that they're so in love.
I do find it rather phenomenal how you're able to write about Johnny and Peter being so in love so many times.
Yeah, eventually I'm gonna run out of ways, right? Like, although I guess, you know, the core of comics is that, you know, you keep doing similar things with these characters, but in different ways. So I'm just really following the tradition.
I was gonna say, where's your Johnny Storm solo series? But I don't know if they would let you do a 100-issue run of just Johnny and Peter being so in love.
They should, but I could also... I really want to write the definitive Johnny Storm childhood comic.
Yes.
We don't have one. And listen, he was sad. I know it.
What better way to get your Marvel opinions out there than just to make it canon?
Yeah. Listen, I know that maybe not everyone else needs 7-year-old Johnny Storm kissing a poster of Jim Hammond, but I need it.
Historical figures Johnny has slept with. Oh, no, that's actually a perfect segue. Because
because Jim Hammond is a historical figure within the Marvel universe. Oh my god. I told someone else this, but I didn't tell you. So I might as well tell you and all of Stormcast at the same time. Do you know when he loses his powers, and he's a singer at that point, and he has a big tour set up, and when he loses his powers, the record label drops him and, like, cancels the tour because his appeal is only as a superhero, not as a blonde pretty boy singer. But he's replaced by someone named Radiance, who I didn't realize was also a Marvel character. I just thought it was, they just put up a poster. But Radiance is a Marvel character who appeared in All New Invaders and kind of had a thing with Jim Hammond.
Oh.
So that went down. Stole his career. Stole his childhood crush. I'm not pulling Jim as Johnny's childhood crush out of nowhere. He literally has a panel wherein he speculates that the reason he developed flame powers is because he loved the original Human Torch so much.
Speaking of historical figures that Johnny is into,
he definitely slept with Davy Crockett. To the point where when he pulls out, like, what is using the time machine for something, Rita's like, you need to leave that man alone.
What issue is this?
This is 501, I believe. Yeah, it's Fantastic Four 501.
And he has also slept with Julius Caesar.
But it's not actually Julius Caesar. It's an alien who is impersonating Julius Caesar. He might have slept with Julius Caesar as well, but, definitely with alien Julius Caesar. I kind of feel like he had a thing for George Washington when they met. Johnny and Reed rescued George Washington. This happened in canon.
I guess those are the main ones that we know of.
Those are the main ones. Stormcast listeners!
They're definitely not the only ones, so we want you to tell us which historical figures you think Johnny has slept with.
Yes.
Not limited to men.
Yeah.
Not limited to humans.
No.
Well.
Okay.
Do what you want. Do what you want.
If somebody says Lassie, we're not gonna not read that out loud, but we might kink shame you.
Drop them in our ask box at johnnystormcast.tumblr.com/ask, and then next episode, we're gonna read them, and Trankat is gonna have opinions.
I'm gonna judge your opinions on Johnny Storm's historical flings.
Oh man, I'm gonna submit one right now.
Sorry that I can only think of dudes here, but to be fair, he's mostly only met historical dudes. I'm trying to think of, like, a historical lady he's had a run-in with, and I can't think of any. This is going to be so terrible, because next episode is... it's a whole can of worms, apparently. Listeners, Yuhi is going to make me reread my most hated part of Fantastic Four canon again. It's probably not actually my most... yeah. Yeah. No, it's my most hated.
You don't have to reread it.
Don't I?
Listeners, next episode is probably going to be the Elijah episode.
We're going to go here.
You asked for it.
A lot of decisions were made by several different writers, all of whom I would fight.
Renew the get down.
Hashtag renew the get down. Hashtag get Johnny Storm a boyfriend.
Okay. Real question. Which members of the Fantastic Four are which members of the Fantastic Four plus one?
That's so hard to say! God! Okay, I think Zeke does have to be Reed.
Because he's the smart one.
Yeah, he's the smart one and he's kind of the de facto leader, sort of. I think Boo-Boo is Franklin.
Okay, that works.
This is hard.
I do think that
Zhao and Johnny are...
yeah. They're both drama queens.
Yeah, they're both very dramatic, and they have a lot of emotions, and they're both gay. But then again, we have Dizzy, who's artistic. I think Sue is probably Dizzy. I think Ra-Ra is Ben.
Does that work? Oh, well, he was Zeke's best friend before Zhao came along.
Yeah, before Zhao home wrecked that.
Oh, is this what happened in the universe where Reed and Johnny get married?
That's what I was gonna say! Okay, so Johnny is definitely Shao.
Yeah, because Shao and Johnny, they're both into, like, their smart best friend.
Yeah, whoever that smart boy is. He's attracted to intelligence. All of the guys. Reed, Peter, Dawkins, even Wyatt, like, Johnny goes out of his way to, like, note that Wyatt, like, aces all his classes, he's so smart, etc., etc. He just likes smart guys.
Is that why he was hanging off a beast?
I think so. Either that or he's a furry.
I mean, I think we knew that.
Yeah, he's open-minded. He is into new sensations. I love him. He just wants to marry a smart guy and have 8 kids. I think Bobby is the exception that proves this rule. Although Bobby is good with numbers. Possibly not Ultimate Bobby, but
yeah.
616 Bobby. He's a secret math nerd. Bobby has a really good time doing taxes.
There's nothing to prove that Ultimate Bobby isn't a secret math nerd. I mean, he like memorizes like music facts.
That does have to do with numbers.
Yeah. He's just good with numbers.
In the future, he's gonna, like, be sitting at the table doing their joint taxes, and Johnny is gonna, like, be overcome with emotion. They're gonna lose some really valuable receipts because Johnny sweeps everything off the table.
Holy shit! Johnny's gonna find out his husband is a smart guy!
They've been married for years.
This has been Stormcast.
This has been Infamous Iron Man Cast.
Rated and review us on iTunes, and thank you to those of you who have already rated and or reviewed on iTunes.
Thank you, except Zoe.
Oh, except Zoe. Freaking Zoe. Follow us on Tumblr at johnnystormcast.tumblr.com. Incidentally, the same place you can go to leave us which historical figure you think Johnny Storm has slept with?
I post a lot of Johnny updates on Twitter, which is at HelloTrainCat. So follow me for more immediate Johnny updates, mostly crying about how beautiful he looked in something.
You can follow me too. I'm really easy to find, but I'm not going to tell you where I am.
Yeah, you have to hunt for Yuhi.
Oh my god, we never introduced ourselves. This is Yuhi.
And this is TrainCat.
Oh, what the heck. My Twitter is at Vilevelns, VILEVELNS.
I'm very friendly. I don't bite. Probably.
I bite. Follow us on SoundCloud at soundcloud.com/fierynight. Bye!
Bye!